Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. On our concluding program of the series, Journey to the Cross, we will explore what happened on Tuesday evening of the Passion Week. Let's open up the Gospels with Dr. John Neufeld as he discusses what Jesus told his disciples concerning the end times on today's lesson, The Journey Will End in Triumph.
I can only imagine the emotional turmoil and exhaustion of Jesus' disciples after the events of Tuesday. On Sunday, they watched him ride into Jerusalem, being hailed as the long-awaited Messiah. Monday, however, seemed strange, yet everything seemed on track. Jesus had roared through the temple, overturning the tables of the money changers and demanding that his house would be called a house of prayer. Then on Tuesday, everything degenerated into conflict. On the positive side, Jesus had done more than hold his own. He had outmaneuvered the Jewish religious leaders and exposed their evil and hypocrisy. But on the other hand, these men had real power, and they would not take being made to look bad lying down. But more than anything, what must have rung in the minds of the disciples were the negative comments Jesus seemed to make about the temple. And so on this emotional, controversial, and contentious day, Jesus signaled it was time to leave Jerusalem once more. Once more, they would take the 3-kilometer trek back down the Kidron Valley and up the other side through the Mount of Olives and then back to Bethany where he would spend the night. Matthew puts it this way, Jesus left the temple and was going away. We should note that as Jesus leaves the temple this day, that he will never return to it again. He has just wept and said, "Your house is left to you desolate." A number of Bible teachers have seen the parallel between Jesus leaving the temple on this day and the glory of God leaving the temple in the book of Ezekiel just prior to its destruction by the Babylonian army. If these Bible teachers are correct in this observation, then Jesus leaving the temple symbolizes that it will now be destroyed. As Jesus' disciples follow him down the Kidron Valley and up the other side, Jesus has them sit down on the Mount of Olives, where they can view the temple. Matthew simply mentions they were pointing out features of the temple, but Mark adds that they said, "Teacher, what wonderful stones, what wonderful buildings." From their vantage point, the temple rose in all its beauty, with its pure golden roof adorning the Holy of Holies, shining in the magnificence of the afternoon and evening sun. And with a heavy heart, he tells them that this temple will not last much longer. Not one stone will be left on another. According to the biblical account, the first temple was destroyed when the Babylonians burned it. But after 70 years of exile, Israel returned to the promised land. Then in 536 BC, the foundation was laid to the second temple, and an altar was dedicated in the exact spot where the previous one had stood. In time, the entire temple was rebuilt. But also in the time of Herod the Great, Herod undertook a massive expansion project on the temple, bringing it to a place of great splendor. By the time of Jesus, this expansion project had not yet been completed. Indeed, it would never be completed. The Romans would burn this temple down before it was ever completely finished. And so on that Tuesday afternoon, towards evening, Jesus sits with his disciples looking at the temple from the Mount of Olives and tells them that the destruction of this temple will be so complete, not one stone will be left on another. The disciples are amazed and overwhelmed at what he has just said. They didn't understand the fig tree, and they didn't understand the driving out of the money changers, but now he speaks as plainly as possible. And with their minds reeling at this announcement, they finally speak. When is this going to happen? And then they jump to the next obvious question, what will be the sign of the closing of the age and of your coming? For them, the destruction of the temple must mean the destruction of their nation, and if their nation is about to be destroyed, this must be a sign that the end of the ages is upon them. How soon? Now, we know that this conversation happened 2,000 years ago, and we know the temple was destroyed in AD 70, and the end of the world was still a long time away. But we must not dismiss the disciples so easily. Since God has made eternal promises to Israel, and since what Jesus was talking about seemed like the destruction of the nation, and since Peter and the others had already recognized that Jesus was the long-awaited Messiah, the question they are asking makes all the sense in the world. And so on that afternoon, from the Mount of Olives, affording them a spectacular view of the temple, Jesus teaches them what is now being called the Olivet Discourse. I need to say at the outset that what Jesus taught his disciples that night has continued to fascinate Bible teachers today, and more so our eschatology, or our doctrine of last things, uses this teaching as the basis for all that the Bible teaches on this matter. And since Jesus taught this during Passion Week, when every event of that week remained so vivid in the memory of the disciples, we can only assume how important Jesus thought this matter was. He begins with a very important statement: "See that no one leads you astray." And what he has in mind, as we will see, has everything to do with false prophecies regarding his second coming. How easy it will be in the future, when I have ascended to my Father and have left you, that you may become misled in this matter. Don't overreact, he says. And then he tells them about the beginning of birth pains, indicating that his coming is going to be a bit further away than they had imagined. I remember when my wife Kathy was pregnant with our first. She had finished university and I was still a student in the university, and we were living in Saskatoon, and it was a glorious summer day. We had taken a stroll together along the banks of the South Saskatchewan River, which flows through the center of the city, along which are some very picturesque walking trails. She was very pregnant, and we were now a long distance from where I had parked the car. And suddenly, for the first time in her life, she felt a contraction. And I had never had a wife with a contraction before, and I began to imagine the worst-case scenario. I could see me delivering our baby by myself and washing it off on the shores of the river. Thankfully, it was not to be. The birth of the baby was still weeks away. I could have relaxed. And that's the image. Jesus is helping his disciples not to become overly panicked by birth pangs. And so Jesus mentions seven labor pains, or seven signs that the earth is convulsing and waiting for the end. But they are not to be alarmed. Just like me standing on the shores of the South Saskatchewan River, this was not the time, but merely a first sign that a great day was hastening on. And so Jesus gives seven labor pains. The first is false messiahs will come leading many astray, false saviors. And by the way, these have appeared at every age and will continue until Christ returns. They are a contraction, a convulsing of the earth, but the end is not yet. Then second labor pain, wars, nation rising against nation. The third, famines and earthquakes. Now the fourth, persecution against believers. Jesus makes it plain that not only will he be falsely put to death, but so will his followers. Acts 6 records the stoning of the first martyr, a man named Stephen. Acts 12 records the martyrdom of the first of the 12 apostles, James, put to death with the sword. History records that the apostle Paul was beheaded and Peter was crucified. The first several hundred years of the church saw terrible suffering, and today that death toll just keeps going on. And as Jesus said, whole nations would hate his followers. Today, the leading nations in the world that persecute Christians are, and let me list some of them, North Korea, Somalia, Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, Sudan, Iran, Pakistan, Eritrea, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, Libya, Yemen. I mean, actually, the real list is much longer than that, but we are living in a day where the followers of Christ face persecution, imprisonment, ridicule, threats, and even death. Jesus said, "Notice the contractions." And then the fifth labor pain, false prophets, along with the sixth, apostasy, a falling away from the true gospel. Satan will recognize the power of what Christ has brought to a ruined planet and will seek to counterfeit the true gospel by bringing confusion. But in the midst of all these labor pains, which sound overwhelmingly ominous and negative, Jesus gives one more, a seventh, which seems sweet and wonderful. This gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed to the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then, yes, and then the end will come. Great advancement of the gospel will happen right alongside of great evil. That is what Jesus predicted. When the church began, the gospel was limited to Jerusalem and Judea. But it went to Samaria, into the Middle East, then into what was called Asia, which are the lands around Turkey. It penetrated deeply into Europe, right into the heart of the Roman Empire. Tradition tells us that the Apostle Thomas carried the gospel into India, but still the vast majority of the earth had not yet heard. Today, the gospel has penetrated North and South America. It has deeply heard in China, is growing rapidly in some of the most unusual places in the earth, like Iran, and is even found to be growing in places like Northern India, in Russia. I mean, the list just goes on and on. Today, a greater percentage of the world has heard the gospel than at any other time in history. I mean, this is profound and amazing if we think about it. And we ask ourselves, is this indeed the day that Christ was talking about? It may well be. So does this mean that Christ's coming will happen in the next short period of time? Well, we don't know. Only that Christ promised this expansion of his gospel into global dimensions before he came. And when we come back, we will look at what Jesus said next about his second coming.
This introduction has given us a lot of insight already into what Jesus meant when he talked about the end of the age and how meaningful it would have been for the disciples who needed reassurance that there was a plan all along, despite the coming destruction of the temple. I think this reminds us as well that even as our world gets increasingly darkened, the gospel will continue to spread. We will see the final birth pain that Jesus described, indicating when he will truly return. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. We're happy to announce Dr. John's 30-day spiritual devotional book known as Quiet Spaces. Psalm 119 verse 11 says, "I have stored up your word in my heart that I might not sin against you." The Bible is an effective weapon against sin. It also brings hope and renews us by reminding us of the promises of God. Bible warns us by giving us commands and consequences, and shows us the unseen vistas of the glory of God and the life to come. Reading the Bible every day is one of the means of grace that God has provided the believer to maintain our spiritual walk. In this one-month devotional book, you will be provided wonderful thoughts of encouragement by Dr. John. To request your copy, call us at 9492-440070. Or you can even send your request by email info@backtothebible.in.